Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Race and Lanes podcast. I am your host Rico Muhammad. Be joined shortly by my co-host Mr. Chuck Snow. Starting off this week's show with the Race and Lanes podcast rise again. I don't think there's no surprise that diesel fuel prices have kind of slowly crept up due to the winter storms that struck the country. And so we have the price of diesel fuel has jumped up by 2.8 percentage points. So we're showing that right now the national average of diesel fuel is sitting at $2.88 per gallon. Last week's storms are likely the result in the largest winter storm damages on record, revealing Hurricane Harvey's damage bill. Rivaling. I got to get my glasses on here. Rivaling Hurricane Harvey's damage bill with more than 70% of the country covered in snow. Dry vans and reefer spot market rates skyrocketed last week. Capacity tightened rapidly as major interstates were reduced to a crawl, pushing record level volumes onto the spot market as contract carriers struggled to fulfill committed capacity. So with that being said, let's see how the rates were performing over the previous week due to the snowstorm that covered most of the United States. Starting off with dry vans, we are starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States. We show that the outbound spot market rate coming out of the northeast was at $2.14 per mile on average. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.22 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.63 per mile for dry vans. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.12. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.29. Jumping over into the flatbed segment of the report, we are seeing that the average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds out of the Northeast was averaging at $2.46 per mile. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, showing average outbound rates at $2.62. Moving up to the Mid-Atlantic and the Midwest, showing outbound spot market rates at $2.96. Coming down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing outbound rates at $2.29. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $2.15 per mile. Shifting gears, moving over into the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.34 per mile coming out of the Northeast. Dropping down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.31. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an outbound spot market rate for reefers at $3.04 per mile. Dropping down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.58. And wrapping up, the West Coast showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.58 as well. And jumping over really quickly, we're going to do a quick little check. And good news to report there that we do not have any bad brokers to report this week on the bad broker report. So that is a good thing. And I'm going to go and grab my co-host at this point in time and welcome him up and on board. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty good, Chuck. Doing pretty good. Looking at the how did – I guess I'll ask you this question. while we're waiting on our guest. Not sure if our guest may make it tonight or not, but it's neither here nor there. We can work this thing out. I wanted to, since we were talking about the winter storm, wanted to ask you, how did the storm affect you and your operation across not only Canada, but also the United States? How bad of an effect did those things have on your operation?
You know, our Dallas office got hit really hard, but, you know, these guys are, I've got to hand it, these are Texans. They're another breed. They just figured it out, and they didn't, the office was closed. They didn't have power, but they, you know what? These guys are smart. They didn't miss a beat. They were able to figure it out and use their cell phones and, you know, freezing their tails off in their homes. They still managed to run business. It's unbelievable. What a crew we have down there. And overall, it had huge effects, none of which are positive other than the fact we realized how great our Dallas team is. But, you know, stuff didn't get picked up. Stuff didn't get delivered. You know, drivers went to go make deliveries down there, and there was nobody there. You know, the place is abandoned. Just, I don't want to swear on the air, but it was a shit show throughout those areas that got hit, especially the areas like Dallas, Fort Worth, where there was just no, there just wasn't an infrastructure to deal with the weather. You know, they don't have a lot of salt there, I'm sure. They don't have a lot of snow plows. Apparently, you're reading all sorts of stories right now that windmills froze. I don't know how true that is, but I can tell you that there has been, you know, just all over, a lot of it has to do with lack of investment in infrastructure. And, you know, it got real ugly. I just got a text from our guest. Hang on a second. Just hang on. Let me just ask him. So it really did affect, it affected everybody. It was, thank God things are going back to normal now, but those poor people in Texas, Louisiana, parts of Oklahoma. Now, apparently there was one part of Texas that was spared, and I think that was down by Laredo. They were on a different power grid. So, if I'm not mistaken, they did better than everybody else because Texas has their own power grid, and I guess that was part of the issue. But it was painful for a lot of people in our industry. Apparently there was truck drivers stranded all over the place that couldn't get fuel on interstates all over because the refineries were shut down. So I think in future, just infrastructures do have to improve if we learn anything from this. What did you see as far as an impact on your business?
Well, fortunately enough, like one of the reasons that I chose, and I think we have our guest sitting on cue. But okay. To answer the question, I think this is an important discussion to have really quickly as well. But that was one of the reasons why I chose to concentrate my dumbbell on the area where I chose to concentrate my dumbbell on. I wanted to avoid as much as possible, because I still was in snow. I still had to brave the snow and stuff like that. But I chose to try to relegate my concentration on the area that I service based on I didn't want to have to deal with, if I was actually one out there driving, I didn't want to actually have to deal with driving in the inclement weather as far as dealing with all of the tons of snow and ice. And that's not to say that we don't get any of that down here, because we do, and it snows quite pretty regularly on portion of my run. But it so far it's been fortunate enough to where it has not been very detrimental the way that it was in places like Dallas and across the other portions of the South, where because I concentrated on the South, but Mississippi was frozen over. So of all places,
yep.
You know, you can't get much further south than Mississippi. So sometimes you can't necessarily avoid those things. But that was one of the things when I was trying to concentrate on what area I want to service and one of the things that I want to do, just to give our listeners some insight. That's something that you may want to consider when you're trying to break down and figure out what area, what's your service area, where do you want to service. So that was one key factor that I did factor in when I was trying, like I say, when I was designating my service location. So, but fortunately enough, I have not experienced any slowdown or anything as far as my customer has been steady at it on both ends. Been fortunate enough to that, and I'm you know kind of excited about what the future holds when it comes to those things because of you know the information I shared with you a little earlier today. So, but I don't want to get off into that too far. Let's go ahead and welcome our guest. I don't want to keep him waiting. Let's welcome our guest, Mr. Ray Veneman, on to the show with us again. Good evening, Ray. How are you?
Hey, good evening, guys. I'm sorry about the delay. I got tied up on another conference call, so I apologize.
Oh, we know all about that.
Oh, no. You got perfect timing. You're just fine. You slid right on in.
You're too kind.
Well done as always, Ray.
So I guess I got a question right now. Go ahead, Chuck. I'll defer to you.
No, you first. Go ahead.
Well, okay. All right. Well, here's a quick question for you, Ray. Right now, how has the market been performing as far as are there any shortages of good used equipment right now? And I'm hearing that there were big orders placed for new equipment. So I'm guessing I'm just trying to get a feel for right now on the market. And excuse me, we've been remiss in our duty. We didn't give Ray a proper introduction. We just came right in, threw him right into the fire, and just
I know.
So,
we didn't even take his hat and coat and offer him a drink.
He made me feel just like at, right at home.
So,
I was gonna say, Rico, is that you?
Chuck, yes, Chuck.
Rico,
Chuck, I'm one of the first. Yeah. I'm gonna defer to you, Chuck. I'm gonna let you give our guest a proper introduction, and then we'll come back around to the question.
Our special guest tonight is our good friend Ray Veneman, who is the Vice President of Remarketing of Used Trucks for Rush Truck Centers of Canada. But Ray has great insight and intel on both the new and used truck markets in both the United States and Canada. I've known Ray for probably over 30 years, and he knows his stuff. So if any of our listeners have any questions about equipment, Ray is the guy to ask, new or used. He knows his stuff. So with no further ado, Ray, I do have a question for you. I'm hearing horror stories about new trucks, just that there are, there's not a lot of material out there on the lot waiting for people. And to order a new truck, they can't give guarantees on pricing for 2022, because apparently most of the slots for the OEMs are all booked up for 2021. So what is that doing to the used truck market in North America?
So this kind of ties in with your question too, Rico, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So, and
right.
it's an interesting conversation or an interesting question because, you know, it's something that we talk about in our office quite regularly, and I seem to see it differently than my coworkers and probably perhaps even my boss. Having said that, I think the truck industry is very cyclical, very more than any business I've seen and been involved in. And I think, you know, I don't know if I'm supposed to answer it this way or not, and I don't know how many people that I work with are listening, but in the U.S. and in Canada is different again. There's a huge demand, Rico, for used trucks and Chuck in the U.S. right now, as there are new trucks. Keep in mind, every 7-8 years, there's a real push for new trucks. That the market goes stupid crazy, and it's in the car business too. And they bring on more and more shifts to try to accommodate. That was somewhat hampered because of the COVID situation and places shutting down. We're all still using. We're having trouble getting certain parts. There are common chips that we all use that we're having difficulty getting, so that's slowing production down as well. So that's making new trucks harder to get. But back to what you both alluded to, order boards are full or filling up. Obviously, certain models are in more demand than others. I saw this happen before where when this talk came along and customers, big fleets, were so afraid they weren't going to get trucks, they would order from different OEMs, and the first ones came in are the first ones they took. But they were just hedging their bets, if you will. I think that's happening a little bit right now as well. As far as used trucks go, when there's a shortage of new trucks, it creates a demand for used trucks, good used trucks, excuse me. So that demand is upon us now. We had a really busy December, January, February, the first couple weeks of February here in Canada were brisk. It's slowing down a little bit right now. I think that's partially because of the call of the possible third wave of COVID. And that may be more of an effect here, Rico, than in the United States. I'm not 100% sure on that, but we're sensing the phone being a little bit more quiet for used this last week and this week. But it will pick up again.
Now, let me ask you a question. When these large fleets order, let's say they order a couple thousand trucks from three different manufacturers, and they don't take them, how does that work? Did they lose their deposit, or do these big manufacturers just keep them in the back lot because figure they'll take them later on in the year? Because every one of these large trucking companies that places these huge orders, they all spec their trucks differently, I would imagine, do they not?
Yeah, anybody that's specing differently, it's interesting, specing. So, and they're not all doing that, Chuck, and maybe I was too broad, painting the brush too broadly, but it does happen periodically, and nobody knows for sure who's doing what and who's ordering what. But specs are becoming more, I want to say, universal. There are some special things, but, you know, everybody's going automatic now. Everybody, you know, yep. Again, there may be the odd simple option or very unique option, but not very many are that drastically different anymore. So if one order isn't taken, it will fill another. Fleets will compromise depending on what the spec is.
Right. I guess that's something that's really changed through the, especially in the last 10 years, as far as having a more universally specced truck as compared to before, where people wanted different gear ratios, different transmissions, everything else. I think so much has just gone to best practices, and all these large equipment buyers talk. They do work together. I understand that some of the big carriers now, this is interesting, I've heard this before, that some of the big carriers even order in tandem. Have you ever heard that?
As buying power type thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't come across that here too much, but there are certainly fleets that are owned. So one owner owns different trucking companies
right.
that still maintain their own individuality. They will sometimes order, through head office for sure. That does absolutely happen. It used to be back in the day, Chuck, and you'd mentioned 30 years ago, specs in the United States and Canada were, vastly different.
Right.
More heavy spec trucks here, transmissions. Now that's all changing, and fleets that are owned here in Canada and in the U.S. are now kind of ordering universal type specs, not requiring quite the heavy spec that they once did. Roads are a lot better now as well, so it makes it easier for specking.
Right. Now, I did hear one of the things that added a lot of fuel to the fire for the new trucks, which certainly affects the used trucks, is that a lot of the fleets, big and small, put orders in for new trucks in order to circumvent the problems with the driver shortage. That, they use new trucks as a recruitment tool. If they have a 3 or 4 year old truck, they'd have to pay a lot more to a driver, where this way, if they could advertise brand new trucks, the latest in gadgets and everything else, automatics, fridge, stove, dishwasher, whatever else you can fit in the cab of a truck, they're throwing in to make it, give people creature comforts. Are you seeing a lot of that, where they're using it as a recruitment tool?
Absolutely. Guys or companies are buying new trucks as a recruitment and a retention tool. As much as recruitment,
right.
It is retention as well. And it's funny, this past week we had a customer, and I don't know if you and I spoke about that earlier or not, but we had a customer that is buying, he's ordered some new trucks for his existing drivers, but he has a couple, half a dozen, 8 drivers that are pretty good drivers. But are more part-time drivers. So he's bought from us good, well-equipped used trucks to satisfy those guys. But, obviously a lot less expensive than a brand new truck that he's buying for his full-time regular guys. So it is a big part of driver recruitment and driver retention, as you said.
So, and that just as soon as people are buying new trucks, of course, that they've got to do something with the old trucks, and those trucks end up on your lot. Because I think we were just talking about it last week. If I'm not mistaken, there are no more markets outside of North America for the used trucks that are, post emission, anything built after 2007, so the last year, places like Africa don't want them, South America doesn't want them, Asia doesn't want them, so they've got to be used here. Am I correct in that? That's what I understood.
That's a big part of it now, for sure. I think, is it going to come a time where even they're going to have to, convert, if you will, if that's the right term? They're going to have to, because we're not making the old ones. So,
right.
It's just one of those things that they're going to have to accept the new engines and the new, and the computers, all of that stuff.
Now, my understanding also, I have to ask you, not that I would do it, because I seriously wouldn't, because here in Ontario, you certainly don't want to get caught. But my understanding is on the newer engines, you can't even delete any of the emission stuff because it's all built right in.
Yeah, I'm not technical enough to know that. I know, I've heard of guys that have done it. It's at a huge, huge cost. It's not legal. I certainly wouldn't promote it, but there is a cost because they have to reprogram the computer as well for that then. So, but I'm not technical enough to know about it and know how exactly it's done. I've heard it being done, but I haven't seen it.
Well, there's a huge cost to doing it, I would imagine. If it could be done, then there's a bigger cost. Apparently, if you get caught in Ontario.
Oh, absolutely.
I think Quebec also, and there's some states as well. And I also heard that if a dealer has one of those trucks in his shop and sees that it is deleted, they grab them in the states. Have you ever heard that?
I have. I don't know which states, and even here, we're not technically supposed to work on them unless we're putting the emissions back in. You know, if you look at the auction sales here, they can't sell them to anybody here in Ontario when and if they go. They can be sold at an auction. I can't sell them unless I'm selling them for parts. But at an auction, they can be sold because there still are certain provinces and certain states that can receive them and will, and they are still legal in. So those people have to identify themselves when they're bidding on them so that Richie knows that they or any of the other auction houses know that it's going to a legal province or state.
I got a question I kind of dovetail in on the subject matter. So
sure.
For our guys and girls that are listening that may have bought a newer truck that has the emissions, and because everybody was having so many problems with them, with those trucks initially, and a lot of people did go out, did do delete, so on and so forth. Now they've had those trucks for a few years, and now they're kind of thinking to themselves, well, maybe it's time to upgrade again. They come to a dealership. They're getting ready to trade that truck in. How does that play? How kind of give me an idea how that scenario may play out.
So I just had that happen to me recently. I just don't entertain them, to be honest, Rico. I can't. And and for them to re-equip the truck is hugely expensive. So quite often, I don't deal enough in it to be certainly an authority. You know, I know enough to be dangerous, but those trucks are sold wholesale or parts or, you know, or to another province or state that they can run legally in.
So they would definitely be damaging. They would be definitely be damaging themselves when it comes to a trade-in situation. They would probably be better off if that's something that they were thinking about doing, selling it privately themselves, not necessarily trying to trade that truck in. Because of the entanglements that it may cause on your end, for the entire transaction.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know it has to be declared at point of sale. So it's just a whole can of worms. It's like anything else. When you do something that's maybe not correct, it always comes back to bite you.
Oh yeah, it bites you in the backside.
So what is there a particular time, Ray? I'm curious. I don't know if we've ever asked you this question or not. Is there a particular time in the year, and particularly for used trucks, maybe not so much for a new truck, but is there a particular time in the year when it's probably maybe a better time than others to maybe think about going out and buying a used truck?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, and it's the trucking industry, it used to be 2-3 weeks in August, I could hang my phone up and not miss a call. There'd be no calls. Now that started probably the middle of July to the end of August. Like it's just that extension. The holiday season's gotten longer. And that's when people are, I think, more anxious to sell as well. But, you know, it's really interesting, Rico, because, you know, no matter what, I don't have the right trucks on the lot. And, you know, it's and you can't order a used truck, right? So I'm thinking I'm getting ahead
right.
of the curve, and I'll bring in a whole bunch of sleepers. And guess what? Everybody wants day cabs. I give you another example. I had a bunch of heavy spec day cabs in my inventory for much longer than I would like. And I was just getting ready to sit down and pencil a strategy to dispose of them or make them more attractive or what, you know. Well, this was 3 weeks ago, and now ask me for a used day cab, and they're gone. And it's nothing I did. The market, all of a sudden, somebody wanted them. And not just one person. Now we're going into spring, so the demand for a heavy spec day cab is growing. So it really depends on the type of truck you're looking for. I know that sounds pretty vague, but there's a kind of a – trucks are seasonal for certain trucks. Sleeper trucks have got
great
busy,
point.
And the demand has grown greatly now because of the new truck slowdown. When I say new truck, when the – you know, it's harder to get new trucks right now. So the sleeper truck market's grown more aggressive and used. But, you know, spring comes dump trucks. Right now, everybody's looking for a dump truck and a heavy spec tractor. In another 2 months, the reefer van truck, the straight trucks with reefers are going to become popular because here in Ontario, our vegetable and fruit market's going to start to grow and get a little busier. So it really depends on the application. And again, that's very vague, but that does help. Seasonal activity makes a difference as well.
Interesting. Ray, I got to ask you a question. I remember about 5 years ago, there was a real push. I was at Matt's down in Louisville, and I was talking to a salesman from Volvo. And there was a truck there that was like a tag, not a tag axle, but it was, I guess that's the best way to describe it. It wasn't a tandem. And it was a design that's come out of Europe. And you could lift, you'd actually lift the front axle of the tractor. And there was a lot of talk about specking trucks with that sort of a spec. And all of a sudden, I notice that's gone really hush now. Are you seeing any of that?
No, I think if I'm not mistaken, we might have touched on that very vaguely a couple calls ago, or podcasts ago. I haven't seen it in a long time, a long, long time. I think, Rico, you saw a couple more of them more recently in the States than we did, if I recall the conversation. But now here, and that dead axle is another one that you couldn't lift, Chuck. I don't see those at all anymore either.
Okay.
Right.
Now, do you think that's because fuel went down a little bit from what it was, or do you just think that I was just wondering if there was any sort of resurgence in that sort of technology? Because they do use it in Europe, I understand. Although fuel is more expensive, they've got some pretty rough weather in Europe as well.
Yeah, I don't, you know, not being an end user, although I speak to them daily, I never really saw a lot of those trucks here. I saw some. They didn't seem to last long in fleets. So I never really understood the purpose of them. Other than wear and tear. But certainly you mentioned weather, traction was an issue with them, or lack thereof. So I can't really answer much about those, Chuck, because I never really understood them and what the purpose was.
Okay, neither did I. And I remember
I think it was just something different.
They weren't legal in every jurisdiction either. I think in the Maritimes they weren't legal.
Oh, I didn't
have
know
a,
that.
If you couldn't use you couldn't run a like an 80,000 pound gross weight the power had to be to both axles. It couldn't be like an air tag. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I remember talking to somebody And I was just wondering if that sort of spec ever has picked up, if you've seen it at all, because there's so many, you know, you read so much stuff and you hear a lot of stuff, and people promote things, and some of us with the greatest intentions, and you want to see whether anybody's buying this stuff. But I think that, you know, you go with what the great big fleets are doing overall, and I don't think you can go wrong. You know, I think they're good at speccing their trucks, and I don't see too many of them doing that. You know, you look at the, you know, the Werners and the J.B. Hunts and Schneiders, and you know, all the rest of them, and you know, they buy thousands of trucks. They know what they're doing. I've had discussions with some of their maintenance departments on speccing trailers, and you know, the one thing that does, especially for trailers, that weighs heavy in making decision is cost. Where I think with trucks a little bit different, cost is certainly very important, but they've got to be able to attract drivers. And that's mm-hmm. the so they make the trucks nicer. And the other thing I did want to mention, you know, in respect to the products you sell, you know, we've come a long way since those first diesel trucks with the you know, with the DEF and everything in 2008, when they first came out with the new technology. We had some of those first on lease, and then we bought some 2013 will not say the name of the company on the air, but it starts with a V, and the head office, I think, is in Sweden, but I will not mention their name. And they were a nightmare. But I have noticed, you know, we've got this last batch of good used trucks that we're running, both ourselves and owner-operators, that are of 2017. And you know what? It seems like and I'm going to touch wood, it seems like the bugs are pretty much out of them. There's little nuances. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on under the hood when you shut them down. That is unlike any other beast. So if the truck is sitting, even plugged in, after 4 days, 5 days, it may need a boost because its power seems to be drawn, but that's not a big deal. But everything else, they seem to work. They go up and down the road. They run pretty well. They get better fuel mileage, I think, than the stuff they built 13 years ago. I think you guys have, you know, I think your engineers have done a great job in redesigning these things. They've had a real tough nut to crack in trying to come up with something to please everybody, because they've got to please the EPA, and they've got to please, you know, California and the trucking industry. A lot of people to please.
Yeah, it really
is. You must be saying the thing.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, you talk about the battery life and the draw. That is so true. And, you know, I was talking to our fleet guys in the office probably a month ago, and then that conversation came up again, I guess it was yesterday, that if I were to spec a truck going forward, a new truck, I would put the in-cab battery kill switch on every truck. So when they exit the truck, they shut it down, they let it run down, and then hit the battery kill switch to prevent the, you know, the seepage, if you will, the drain on the
right.
batteries. And it's not a huge expense, especially for, you know, me, who sees so many used trucks come through, and I see the trucks that we have that actually have those on it versus the ones that don't, man, it's a
right.
huge advantage. I'd put them on every truck. And you know, the other thing it's good for, it helps prevent theft. So
yeah, of course.
You know, there's a couple good reasons to do it. So
can you do it after market, right?
You can, but like everything else, Chuck, I think the cost becomes more prohibitive. But you could absolutely do it. It's just it's just so cheap to do it from the factory versus doing it aftermarket. But I would definitely, you know, if I had a truck going in for service, I would get a quote on putting one of those in for sure as well.
Because really, when you're building that truck, I would imagine it's nothing more than running a wire to a toggle switch.
It's a turn switch. It's not a toggle, but it is that simple, right? It is. They do that.
Right. I remember we had some trucks from Ryder, and they all had kill switches on the back, actually. And they were a turn switch. And that was that really saved a lot. You know, if somebody wants to take some good lessons about specking trucks, the people at Ryder and all these companies, that's what they do. They probably spec more trucks than anybody because they're such huge buyers.
The buyers have got so cost conscious that it's difficult when you're like for us, when we order stock units, it's difficult for us to put them on stock units because, believe it or not, $5 or $10 seems to make a deal now. It's kind of the short-term thinking. If I'm only going to pay, $150,000 at the dealer next door, but I'm going to pay you $150,100, I got a better deal next door. And it is right. That, believe it or not, they cut it that thin now. But if you're ordering a truck, I'd be ordering stuff like that. I'd be looking at those things, what the cost is versus the savings.
Yeah. People sometimes have a great understanding of money, but they have no concept of value.
Exactly.
And that's the issue. And of course, when you're going out and you're trying to buy a used truck, you've got to fight with that because quite often, you bought a truck that came out of a fleet where they were cutting pennies in half in order to meet budgets and everything else. And of course, I guess we're going to see more of that because truck prices have increased so much that the large fleets are going to be looking, everywhere they can to cut costs.
Exactly right.
That's what the future is going to hold. But who knows? The more you read in truck magazines, we're reading more and more about battery operated trucks. I'm waiting to see one. Have you seen any up here in Canada?
I have not personally. I saw a couple at truck shows, but I haven't
totally
seen any actually operating. Excuse me.
There was a photo of one last week or the week before on Instagram, and it was sitting on a low boy trailer. And I asked the guy, I said, why is it on the trailer? It should be pulling it. And his answer was, frozen up. Which I don't think these things would be running very well at 40 below in the North Dakota in January or February.
You
know how the cold drains batteries. So I think they still have their challenges ahead of them. And I think diesel is going to be around for a little while yet. We haven't seen the end of it yet. But I think the technology is, it's just getting better. What improvements are you hearing that are coming out for newer trucks?
Well, of course, I think, I don't know if improvements are as much as, the autonomous driver type things, the Bendix, collision mitigation systems.
Right.
They're getting better and better. The ability to look at your and predict your services and your breakdowns and preventive maintenance all electronically now through onboard equipment and computers on the trucks are so much better now and so real time. It's unbelievable. But, you know, the collision mitigation systems are fantastic. Your old school drivers, it takes a little bit of the driving out of their hands. So it's a learning curve. That, you know, when I have trucks delivered to fleets and our older drivers that do drive them and deliver them for us, some of them complain about it, but it's funny how after delivering a few of them, they start to enjoy it. And they understand, you know, it's like the adaptive cruise, it's the lane departure assist, all of those things combined that eventually make for a better driving experience.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the only way to have all, you know, to have these, I'm not going to call them autonomous trucks, but these autonomous features that make truck driving easier. You know, it's the cameras that you can have, you know, strategically placed along the side of your tractor and trailer that make it an easier job. You know, when you see that tiny little Miata come beside you, you know, you're not looking at the bottom of your convex mirror. You just see this little red thing. You can actually see a clear picture of him there and things like that, that they're going to maybe make it a little bit easier to hire people and to insure them. Rico was just telling me today, he went, you know, Rico, share your story about drivers and insurance, because this is a classic.
Absolutely fascinating. I've hired drivers before, and I didn't know. I changed insurance companies recently, and I'm hiring for drivers, and I've had about 5 applicants that applied. And bear with me for just a minute. I'm going to see if I can pull the email up. But while I'm doing it, so the variations, I sent all 5 applicants into my insurance company, just wanting to get an idea of who was going to be the best candidate, and I'm trying to narrow down my process. Of course, you know, initial conversations, everything seems to be very good during the initial conversations with the gentleman. But the one thing that helped narrow down the selection, I got the email back from my insurance company about these drivers, and my insurance company broke down each driver by how much it would cost to add them to my insurance and put them on the fleet. And the range, I can't find the email right now, but it just suffices it to say that the range started from on the low end, $1,500 to add a driver, which was the best, and as much as almost $10,000 to add a driver, to add a driver onto to my insurance. So it was a huge, huge disparity in the driver and the cost that it was to add a potential driver onto the fleet. And like I said, when you're thinking about the cost of adding a driver on, you know, versus, you know, the amount that you're going to be paying the person for compensation, but then the other factor on the backside of how much is it going to cost to even bring this driver on, that really helped me narrow down my criteria, and the person that I decided I was going to hire.
That's huge. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, that's what his insurance company wanted. So, you know what? If you have all of these things like the crash mitigation and sensors and everything else, it's going to make it easier to bring people in and to train people. And we may be able to get more drivers. You know, we've had to do it with the automatic transmissions because nobody knows how to drive a manual anymore. I don't know very many people have manual transmissions in their cars, never mind trucks.
Yes, that's correct.
And I would think within 5 years, there will be no more manual transmissions in Class 8 trucks unless maybe they'll keep them for heavy haul. I don't even know if they have a place for a future in heavy haul anymore either, because some of the stuff they're coming out is pretty incredible.
Ray, what are you seeing when it comes to that, though, Ray? Are you seeing many more automatic vehicles coming down the pike versus the manuals, or what's been your experience?
So here in Canada, and it's just starting to get that way in the United States, but in Canada, the majority of trucks now are automatic. Chuck had mentioned heavy haul. Even the heavy haul trucks are automatic dump trucks, where, you know, 10 years, well, maybe 15 years ago, if you tried to sell a dump truck driver an automatic, they'd look at you sideways. Now, with more traffic on the road, with the smarts of these trucks now and the shifting ability, it's pretty hard to get better fuel mileage doing stuff manually, and not to mention the wear and tear on your body and the changing of clutches, et cetera. It just seems automatics are the way to go. And it's funny, I export more of my manual transmissions to the United States because there's still a lot of guys that really enjoy and like the driving, the manual transmission, having that control and the real diehard truck drivers, that's what they still enjoy. But I was talking to our guys over there, and they say it's getting more and more that people are starting to order automatics there as well.
It makes perfect sense. I have to be honest with you. You know, you're both my friends. I'll tell you the truth. I always said, I wouldn't want a truck with an automatic transmission. And one day I'm out on the highway doing something with a load, and I hit bumper to bumper traffic when I wasn't expecting it. It was construction zone or an accident. And you know what? A half hour on that clutch, and I realized that at the time my 65-year-old left leg wasn't 21 anymore. And by the time I got back to the yard, I thought, you know what? If I ever buy a truck for myself, I'm going to make sure it's an automatic. And I did.
Yeah.
Because,
exactly.
There's more bumper to bumper traffic now. And, even the military doesn't use manual transmissions anymore. So where are you going to find a young person learn how to drive a manual?
And why would they want to?
Yeah, I think I do love driving them. There's no two doubts about it. But if I had to do it for a living, there's no way. Not with the way traffic is. You know, even in the middle of the night sometimes you have construction or you have a crash or something up ahead. So who needs the aggravation? Are you seeing, from what you're talking to your customers, are you hearing that people are pretty happy with the newer trucks with fuel consumption?
Yeah, I think so. Chuck, I haven't had anybody really complaining about it, that's for sure. I'd have to say all in all, they're pretty happy.
I think we're over. I know that the first ones, from our experience, like those back 08s, 010s, 011s, I didn't notice much of a fuel savings on those. As a matter of fact, fuel consumption was heavier on those than it was the pre-emission trucks. But I'm noticing now, looking at miles per gallon right around the fleet, any of the guys with newer trucks they're doing fine. Nobody is, and maybe with us because we haul heavy for dry van. Nobody's getting bell ringers. Like, I'm not seeing anybody with, 11 miles per gallon. Although I have a friend of mine in the U.S. who, when she hauls, she's been on the show, Angela, when she hauls light with her truck, which is fairly new, it's about a 2015 or something, She's gotten 11 miles per gallon with a Mack, with an automatic.
Wow.
But that's hauling light. But I haven't heard anybody up here getting anything like that. I don't even think you can get that bobtailing up here.
I don't think I get that with
Rico,
my pickup truck the way I drive.
Rico, have you ever gotten
I'm looking
like
at
that any of your trucks?
I'm sorry, say that again, Chuck.
Have you ever gotten anywhere close to 11 miles per gallon on any of your trucks?
Oh, no. But I'm looking at the time.
Have you lost your mind, man?
I'm looking at the time, and our hour has just blown by. So I want to give Ray an opportunity to let the good people know that are listening in how they may be able to get in contact with him, and if he may be able to help them out and assist them with anything.
Well, thank you. That's very nice, Rico. And I'll say this. A friend introduced me to a fellow who wants to buy a truck. He's not going to buy a truck from me, but he needed an understanding of the CVOR, the licensing, all of those. So I helped him through that process. And, the one thing I will say, I'm old enough now, and I'm just happy to meet more people and happy to help. If I get a sale out of it, or if my sales team gets the sales out of it, that makes us extremely happy. But, even if it's just help, or you're looking at a truck here in Ontario and you want me to take a look at it for you, I'm happy to do it. My name is Ray Veneman. I work for Rush Truck Centers of Canada. I'm the Vice President of Vehicle Remarketing here. As Chuck alluded to earlier, I've got a long history in the truck business, so I know a lot of people and a lot of great people in this industry. So if I can help you out, my phone number is 416-816-5239. Thanks, Rico and Chuck.
No, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate your
time.
Chuck. Yes, sir.
Chuck, need to get hold.
I want to let the people know how to get a hold of you as well.
Okay. You can send me an email at chuck@traffix.com. And if you need to get set up as a carrier, you're having some challenges in your business, or you have some questions, anything you need, send me an email, or you can call me. My extension at the office is 203, which is really important, or you're never going to get me. And the phone number is 800-388-4352. And again, extension 203. And you can always send me a private message on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. And again, anything we can help you with, we certainly will.
Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to hang out with us for a little while. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but we definitely are most eternally grateful for you taking some time to hang out with us. For Ray Veneman and Chuck Snow, this has been the Rates and Lanes Podcast. I have been your host, Rico Muhammad, and God willing, we will talk to you guys same time, same place next week. And hopefully we will have the video up and going. I'm working diligently on that, and I think that by me getting this employee hired and freeing up some more time, I think I'm going to be definitely. I think I'm going to be able to make that happen. So we're going to put the pressure on to try to make that happen. Be looking for links for that, and we'll talk at you guys same time, same place next week. God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. Be safe out there, everybody.
Catch on the flip-flop. And I need to just warn our listeners, Rico is on the tear. He's working on a bunch of things to improve his business, improve his life. I'm proud of him. He's on this cleanse diet, and he's doing all sorts of stuff and doing it all at once, which is really great. Rico, I wish you luck with all of it, man. Anything I can do to support you, you know I'm there. I'm really proud of what you're doing.
I appreciate it, Chuck. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Good night, and God bless.
Take care, guys.
Goodbye.